Welcome to the Why We Build podcast. Join Steve Wheeler and our host, Greg Waller, to explore the world of remodeling. Whether you're on the production team, design team, or managing the whole show, you can expect insights, tips, and stories that inspire and educate. So let's dive into the Why We Build podcast. On today's episode, Mason Lord, founder of Hudson Valley Preservation and Trades Up.
Welcome to the Why We Build podcast. This is episode one, season one. This is not normally how we kick it off. Usually Steve and I talk a little bit back and forth, but when we originally recorded this, it was a while back, and some of the things that we had to say there are no longer timely, if you will. Some pop culture references and stuff that are probably not funny anymore. They probably weren't funny then. Why don't we get into the show? You know, today we're covering a topic that's the core of everything that we do, and that's providing service to others. So not in the sense of customer service or the services that we provide as builders, but rather an act of service. Service goes beyond our work, and it's the fuel that powers our communities, builds lasting relationships, and creates opportunities for the next generation. Now, when we think about acts of service, we often think about giving back, especially to our communities. But what about the service we provide to each other as peers, colleagues, and leaders in our field? At Remodelers Advantage, we see firsthand every day how powerful it can be when professionals come together, not just to grow their businesses, but to serve one another. It's about sharing knowledge, offering support, and being willing to step up and help a fellow remodeler overcome a challenge. It's a community that thrives on the idea that when we lift each other up, we all rise. But today, we want to take this idea of service just a little bit further, because it's not just about each other in the here and now. It's about investing in the future. And that brings me to someone I'm really excited to introduce you to. If you've not met Mason or heard of Mason, he is the owner and founder of Hudson Valley Preservation in Kent, Connecticut, and also the founder of Trades Up. Now, Mason is one of those people who just gets it. He understands that service isn't just about what's happening today, but also about who is going to carry the torch tomorrow. Mason and his amazing team at Trades Up are stepping up in incredible ways to help shape the future of our industry. Through programs like Spark and other initiatives, we can talk about workforce development, but we're also talking about helping young people see that there is a place for them in the trades. There is a career path here, and it's viable, and it's rewarding. And I can say that from firsthand experience. We all know that our industry is facing a real challenge, finding the next generation of skilled workers who will keep our businesses, our communities, and our economy moving forward. And the truth is, it's up to all of us to do something about it. That's why what Mason and the folks at Trades Up are doing is so vital. They're building programs that connect young people with the skills, training, and I think most importantly, the mentorship they need to see the trades as a real career option, a place where they can grow, thrive, and make a difference. This is service in its purest form, giving of your time, your knowledge, and your resources to help someone else succeed. It's about creating opportunities where there were none, or at least not many. It's about ensuring that our industry has the talent, passion, and dedication it needs to continue to grow and thrive for generations to come. As we get ready to talk to Mason, I want all of us to think about what service means in our own lives and businesses. How can we serve each other better? And how can we give back to the community that supports us? And most importantly, how can we invest in the next generation of builders, remodelers, and trades people? Now, all things considered, service is more than just a word. It's a commitment to each other, to our craft, and to the future of our industry. And it's people like Mason Lord who remind us just how powerful that commitment can be. So Steve, let's give our guest a proper introduction.
All right, let's go ahead and get started. Mason Lord has been involved in residential remodeling since 1981, having started as a carpenter upon graduating from college. After an apprenticeship at the Restoration Workshop for the National Trust for Historic Preservation at Lyndhurst in Tarrytown, New York, he started in business as a restoration craftsman and grew the business to become Hudson Valley Preservation in 1991. Hudson Valley Preservation has evolved into a single source solution for project delivery, providing architectural design services and the build. He's also the founder of Trades Up, founding that in 2022. Trades Up is a 501c nonprofit working to reignite the interest in the trades. Welcome to the show, Mason.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Greg.
Mason, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well.
Yeah.
I had an exciting day yesterday. I drove up to Boston for the Midwest Building Science Symposium.
Okay.
And met some of the people, listened to some of the people that I've admired over the years. And it was a great day for me to be up there talking to these industry kind of heroes, I would say.
Yeah, our mutual friend Ben Bogie was there presenting, and Ross Strathui and Steve Basic, lots of people that we look up to along the way. Very good stuff. Now, I think Steve gave you a really good introduction, but I want to understand your background and how it formed your ideas to build Trades Up in the capacity that it is today.
Well, I think it's a long story, and I'll try to keep it short. So it's not like your family's travel photos, but really what started was my father died when I was in first grade of a brain tumor. And that was a scary time for me. I was fortunate, however, to have a number of male mentors throughout the years. And the first of those mentors was my neighbor across Underwood Road from me in Baltimore, Mr. McNair. And to give you an idea of the kind of guy Mr. McNair was, every Christmas Eve, he and Mrs. McNair would invite all the kids of the neighborhoods to the house. And at the end of the evening, Mr. McNair would come down the stairs dressed as Santa Claus with a big sack of gifts over his shoulder. And the thing that I remember about that is that my name was on the gift. And I really thought this gift was picked out just for me. It made me feel good. The other thing about Mr. McNair is he had a wood shop in his basement, and he invited me down there to build little simple pieces of furniture. And I still have the little blue chair that I built for my baby sister, Rebecca. And it's now at my son Alex's house for my granddaughter, Piper, who is about a year and a half now. So that was where the spark was really lit for me. And I had great industrial arts program in high school, middle school and high school. And I built a little more sophisticated pieces of furniture. And I even built a boat my junior and senior years. I went to college, and I think I felt adrift a lot in college. I didn't feel like I was doing anything that made me feel worthwhile. And I have a recollection of one day, I think it was my senior year, feeling low and not feeling worthwhile. And all I wanted was a router. And I don't know what I was going to do with that router. I just know that I wanted to make something, and that would have made a difference for me. And then after that, I graduated from college. My high school football coach had started a remodeling business, and I went to work with him. And from there, Lyndhurst, then I think, as is typical with a lot of tradespeople, go out on your own. My partner at the time then, Craig Marchessault, and I put $100 each into a bank account, and we had a job lined up, and we just went from there. It was a great business plan.
And that's the start of Hudson Valley Preservation?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Craig and I had a business called Craig Mason Restoration that we started in 1987. And the mentors have continued through this time, and I still am finding mentors throughout.
Mentorship is something I definitely want to touch on a little bit later, but talk to me a little bit about Trades Up and what the mission of Trades Up is all about.
Well, the mission really is to get all types of people into the trades. When I started in the trades in the early 80s, it was really exclusionary. If you weren't white and relatively intelligent, then if you were a female, person of color, LGBTQA, somebody who learned differently, you didn't stand much of a chance to stay on a job site. You had to be really, really tough. I remember thinking that construction back then, you had to be tough, whether you were like me, a white guy with a college education. So for Trades Up is to invite all types to our events. And the goal is use your hands with tools. We're not trying to build something. It's not competitive. And when we did our first event in 2022, we didn't know what was going to happen. I think, Greg, you were on the planning team, and we didn't know if we're going to have 100 people, which would have been a little disappointed, or 500 people, which would have been scary. And it turned out we had almost 500 people. We thought the age group was going to be middle schoolers. It turned out that elementary schoolers was the age group that showed up with their parents. And we had five-year-olds using circular saws to cut a 2x4. I mean, we weren't doing anything fancy. All the tradespeople that came set up an experience. They adjusted because they didn't know what was going to happen either. We were like, well, what if there's 20 kids waiting at somebody's booth to do something? Somehow it just all worked. It was a beautiful fall day. And the excitement of these kids from 5 to 12 cutting a 2x4 and then looking at their mother with this smile on their face, you could just tell their confidence had grown in a matter of moments.
I had to experience that day through the power of social media. I had COVID and I couldn't make that event, but I just remember seeing people, folks you would never expect in, you know, the arborist there. And, you know, it was a boy climbing a tree that I never would have guessed that would have been even possible. And it was such a beautiful moment. It was a beautiful moment to see. And then I know I'm interviewing you here, but I'm thinking about just what the trades brought that day. Like, I remember the plumbing setup was amazing. Electrical setup was amazing. And we didn't know what they were going to bring that day. So yeah, that was a really special, special moment at a Spark event, which I know you're regionalizing. I've seen it out in Massachusetts now as well. And you've got the event coming up in Kent. What are some of the experiences that these youngsters can try? Like, what are some of the hands-on moments?
There's woodworking, carpentry, electric, plumbing, as you mentioned, arborists. There's historic trades. We've had blacksmiths. I think this year we're going to have Michaela back again. She is a farrier, and she was teaching children how to shape a horseshoe, and the kids got to take their horseshoe home. There's a sign painter. We have quilters and weavers. Really, what we told the tradespeople was we want the children to use tools with their hands. The idea was not for them to come and stand around while the tradesperson talked about what they were doing. We wanted them to hold the tools. And I think that's really where the magic happened. We had last year's event, there was a little girl who was probably 4 years old who was slinging mud with a trowel onto bricks. And she was having such a good time with it, and her parents were getting impatient. And you could hear on the video her mother say, "Okay, honey, it's time to go." And this little girl she was dressed up in a little frilly dress. She turned around at her mother, and she was probably 4 years old, and said, "No." and continue to throw mud on the bricks. We also have had landscapers. And as I said, use your hands with tools. That would count a chef. We don't want to exclude tradespeople. We did have a guy suggest that he could be an umpire there, and that just didn't fit. I think he was trying to recruit young umpires.
When I was in high school, it was frowned upon for me to take my boat building class or my carpentry class. And fortunately, I had my mom. You know, she fought for me, as moms should do. But what are some of the biggest misconceptions that maybe parents have about children going into the trades?
Everybody's parents, not everybody, but a lot of parents in the school certainly are pushing for college. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with college. It is very expensive, and a lot of people go into debt. There are certain people that are better fits for the trades. And the misconceptions, I think, are the stigma. And I don't know if maybe when you were in high school, the push against you from doing any kind of shop class was that, well, no, that's for the bad kids. That's for the kids that are maybe not as smart. So you're going to go to college, and there's pressure from the parents. And the other thing we've noticed too is that a lot of the parents that come and see what we're doing, they say, oh, I would never let my child do that at home. This is amazing. And they're all filming their children using the tools. And so to go back to your question, I think that's shifting. It's not rapid, but I do think that parents are starting to rethink college. The return on investment is just not there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like I said, college is great if you can afford it and you don't put your child into big debt. And don't force them to go to college. Let them experience. The other thing is with Trades Up, we are a first step. There's nothing wrong with somebody coming to this event, learning how to use a tool, becoming interested in it so they can figure out how to fix their own house when they grow up. Go off and become whatever you want, but you may not have to call a tradesperson when you own a house to fix your clogged toilet or change something electrical for yourself. And I think that building the confidence in children is really part of the impact. And the thing that separates what we're doing with Trades Up is a lot of the workforce development programs out there really focused more on middle school and over, high school, trade school, technical school. But what we want to do is be able to get that spark lit and then have places that we can. So what happens after that? Well, we are doing local events at the Eric Sloan Museum. We've had Intro to Carpentry, Plumbing Basics, Drywall and Painting. And our goal is to have a summer camp eventually. And if we could even have a workspace where there could be classes and some of the mentors could be working at this place, that would be great. And that would be the local impact. We are working to create a toolkit for other communities. And you mentioned Massachusetts. Martha's Vineyard is going to have a Spark event October 26, 2 weeks after ours. And they're acting as a beta test for doing this. So one of our presenters, Andy Steele, comes from the Boone, North Carolina area, and he's driven up 10 hours, brought his family to our two events, and he is interested in doing an event down in his North Carolina area.
Steve.
That's amazing. I've had many discussions around the skilled trade gap, the trade deficit, all of these things, and I feel like when you start going down this road of discussions of how we got here, all of the discussions around four-year education colleges, I mean, it's normally a discussion that needs about 6 hours to really dive into all of the different avenues. So it's tough within a 30-minute parameter. But I'm well aware of when I was in high school and different stereotypes, misconceptions of the kids that did go into the co-op program, or, you know, you either went to a college or you went into military or the trades. And that seemed to be, at the time, something that was bad. Now, I went to college as well. Afterwards, while I was job hunting, I jumped in the trades too. At that time, it was carry lumber, sweep the floor for a year, and then we'll yell at you. And then if you stay around, we'll start letting you use the saw and things. And I think those times have changed. So I'll put a pin in that part of the question. But, you know, I didn't know I would ask this question until now, but I'm curious if you've ever looked into why traditional universities, why it's such a Bloods and Crips, greasers and socias type avenue, why traditional universities have stayed away from adding curriculum like the trades.
I think, like you said before, that's a 6-hour conversation. and I have been doing some research trying to understand this a little bit better. And recently I came upon an article that spoke to I think this started maybe in the 70s and maybe even in the 50s, College Board and the AP classes. So you could get above a 4.0 if you took an AP class, whereas if you were in technical school, you could only get like a 2 or a 3 as your grade. And that, I mean, even I talked to a contractor who I'm asking to be a presenter, and he said that even in the trade school that one of his children is going to, our technical school, that they're even pushing for college at this point, which seemed a little strange to me. But, and why is college not doing it? Maybe there's the stigma that, well, we can't charge that much money for education if we teach them how to use their hands.
That's part of the question, because I do think there is room for some of the intangibles that college gives you. It's time management, it's being away from home, it's structuring your day, those types of things I think are incredibly valuable. Learning information, being tested on it. I think there's a place for the structure. And then, you know, having that 4 years of being a little wild, having a beer bong or two, you know, those types of things, but all within the confines of setting yourself up for future growth. And it just, you know, I've really never thought about that up until this point. But, you know, I wonder why the structure of college couldn't, you know, bring in more people from the trades. I'll go into kind of my next question is, as you are talking with the, you know, the elementary school children, when they're getting their first taste of using their hands, because I actually had a similar experience. I ran into my old den leader from Boy Scouts recently, and I still use to this day, if I do a weekend project, I have a tool box that I made back then, and I still use it. I love it. It's like, it's one of my prized possessions. It's great. And but I remember the joy of making it. And so when you are teaching, when the kids are getting their first taste of tools and building something in a finished product, are you talking to them about, you know, here's that direction, or are you just trying to really harness the excitement of using the tools and what building something looks like?
That's a great question. I think a lot of what we're doing is giving the real basics of using the tools. For instance, in the plumbing basics, we taught them how to solder, and what they were soldering was maybe a rectangle. So there were elbows, there were little short pieces. We had them cutting the pipes with that. So they weren't learning how to run a water line in a house to a sink. Last year when we did plumbing basics, we did cut and install a sink into a countertop. So they got to use a jigsaw. One of the things that we also really want to express is the passion and the heart of what it is to be in the trades. And that's part of, I think, what the tradespeople that are at an event can share with the children. And Patrick McComb, the senior editor at Fine Home Buildings, wife Carol, said this last year, the tradespeople are self-selecting, the ones that come to this, because they're volunteering their time, they're coming, they're showing their thing. Nobody's getting paid to do this. And they're giving up a Saturday. And a person that is really not thinking about service, like, I'm not trying to convince people to come do this. I'm telling them, come on, this is a lot of fun. And I think more and more of tradespeople sharing their passion for what it is that they do is a piece that will also help with shifting the ship to go in a different direction.
So real quick, the college, it's not a four-year college, but on the Tim Fowler show, we had Greg Helmish from North Iowa Area Community College's great program that he's doing out there. And I know there's others in the country as well. Can you please, like, you've said Spark a bunch of times, and I know Spark is also the name of the event now. What does that mean to you, and where are we going with this?
If you've never done this, if you've never used a tool, you don't know what you don't know. And I think with what these younger children are getting is almost an immediate feeling of confidence that if they go to a lumberyards can be intimidating. And if they don't know anything about what's in there, they're going to stay away from that kind of a place. Whereas if they've had a little bit of experience with tools and materials, they're not going to be as intimidated. And I think a lot of these kids that come to our events go home and either help their parent do something, or they ask for a tool that they can have so they can start doing something. So maybe we're creating a bit of a ruckus.
We like the word ruckus.
Yeah. And Greg, if I could jump in, I think something that's so important to mention with the trades is that life is really about being of value. You could say being of service to others, but also, a caveat to that is a being of value, and knowing how to do something is incredibly valuable. So when you come out of college, unless you're specifically going to college for biology, something that will go into postgrad, you can learn how to do things. But a lot of times with a consumer economics of a business, you're going to get a general studies and you know about things, but you don't yet know how to do things. And that's why, you know, the trades, just when you try to talk somebody that may be in the general direction of college, you can make an incredible living if that's what you wanted to do. And you could move anywhere in the world because you know how to do something. And that's the main point. And, you know, I'm curious if in your teachings and your promotion of the trades to young people, what are some of the talking points that you mentioned? Is it along those lines, or what other things do you do to maybe not entice is the word, but just to promote the trades to young people?
I have to say, at this point, we're not doing much of that. It's really just happening organically.
Exposure.
Yeah. Yep. And I think as this organization grows, we're a fledgling grassroots organization at this point. Well, we're learning every year at the event, and as we start to do the smaller programs, we're learning that the kids learn a lot. I at the Sloan events, after we're done, I asked the kids, did they have any oh wows when they were there? And I get a lot of great answers, and I find out what was it that they really liked to do. At the drywall program at the Sloan Museum, we had kids take a hammer. My business partner, Dave, drew a spider on the drywall because his son once smashed a hole in the wall with a hammer, killing a spider, and they smashed a hole in the wall, and then we showed them how to make a patch. And I would say that the majority of the kids, that was their favorite part. of doing this. So they got to smash a hole in the wall with a hammer, but they also got to learn how to fix that in a professional manner. And I doubt they'll ever forget how to go about doing that. So that's a long circular answer to your question, but I think it's really the kids are using hands with tools.
That's so cool. I love the OLs.
Last thing for me is about mentorship, because like you, Mason, I had a lot of great male role models in my life. My grandfather was a boat builder. My dad was just, you know, always there for me. And not that I didn't have great women. My mom was, obviously, I told the story, she's a super good influence as well. But what can people do to be better mentors, or just to be a mentor? What simple steps can someone take in order to provide mentorship to somebody?
I think patience is maybe where you start, and kindness, paying attention, getting to the level of the person you're with, not judging them for how they are or how they respond, being interested in the best for whatever that person is, building them up, helping them to succeed in whatever it is they're doing or trying to do. And if they're not cutting on the line, be patient and show them how maybe to do it a little bit better. I mean, there are some kids that at some of these smaller events, like we'll do at the Kent Memorial Library Carnival, that's around Labor Day. I'll put a 1x12 piece of pine on a pair of horses that are down low to the ground, and I'll draw half moons on the 1x12. And I can teach a five-year-old to cut that half moon and pretty much stay on the line in less than 5 minutes. And some of the kids are really good at first, and they adjust. Like if they're going off the line, they spin the back of the jigsaw so that it gets back into where they're going. And some kids, they're off. It's going to take a little longer, but they're all going to get it eventually.
Not so, just kids. I'll get it eventually too.
Yeah. And we have had, the other thing is, I don't want to exclude adults. We're happy to have adults come and learn how to use a tool also. And
that is super to hear, Mason.
It's Hammer Time with Steve Wheeler.
All right. You ready, Mason?
I'm ready. I'm
gonna ask you a few questions here. So who would play you in a movie about your life in the business?
Sam Shepard.
That is a absolutely fantastic answer. Sam Shepard, there is a resemblance there, Mason. I don't know if you know. Okay. How about you have to choose a drink, tea, coffee, or energy drink?
Black coffee.
That's my man right there. Black coffee every day. Favorite book, fiction or nonfiction?
This is nonfiction. Shantaram.
Shantaram.
Shantaram. It's about a 900-page book, and it's the most amazing book I've ever read.
How about the most rewarding part of your job?
Well, as a Hudson Valley preservation owner, I really like the investigating and the front-end design piece. I also like getting on a job site and actually using tools. I don't get to do that as much, but I can do things like if there's a cornice that needs to be rebuilt, I can look at that and help figure out how to do that. I really enjoy that. And with Trades Up, being a founder of a nonprofit is very different from owning a for-profit business. And I feel like sometimes I'm a floundering founder. But the part of it that I really enjoy is working with the children and seeing them do things like cut a half moon out of a piece of 1x12, and then seeing their reaction, like holding it up in the air. Look, showing their parent, who was, of course, videoing with the,
the phone. Yeah. All right. So last but not least, you can choose one. Your favorite quote, let it be inspirational or whatever, or the best business advice you ever received.
I don't know if this is the best business advice, but this has stuck with me since I think it was like 1984 that I heard this. And it was by a guy who my stepfather had put me on a fishing boat with. And this guy was some executive in a big company. And I asked him that question, what advice would you give to a young person starting out? And he said, be totally honest and fear no one.
Wow.
I still am working on that fearing no one part.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fantastic. That's a great end to our segment there, Greg.
Mason, thank you so much for joining us. It's really special that you're a guest. I think you're an awesome person, and I love what you've done for the trades, especially in our area. Give us the rundown, the details of the event, when, where.
The Spark Kent event is October 12th from 10 o'clock till 4 o'clock at the Connecticut Antique Machinery Association and Eric Sloan Museum properties. So they're on the same property. And then the Martha's Vineyard event is October 26th, and I believe that's from 12 to 4, and that is at the Agricultural Hall in West Tisbury.
And how can we get in touch with Mason?
Well, Trades Up, you can get on the website, which is tradesup.org, and you can reach me at mason@tradesup.org.
Very good. Mason, thank you so much for your time today.
You're really welcome, Greg. Thank you. I appreciate being on here.
Thank you. Take care.
Steve, what'd you think of Mason, Spark, Trades Up? Pretty amazing stuff, isn't it?
Greg, like I said, I could spend 6 hours talking about the influence of trades in my life, but the direction of young people to the trades, where I think we all share a passion around it. It's amazing to hear people that do something about it, in Mason's example. And I've always considered myself somebody that's kind of tied into the niche building community, Greg, but you take it to an entirely different level. So I've loved the exposure that you've been able to show me. And this is a prime example of being introduced to Mason and hearing the things that he's done, but the things that he's aiming to do in promoting and reigniting trades to young people specifically. So I found this to be just really, again, eye-opening, again, more exposure to this topic, and I love everything about it.
And seeing it in action, you know, the passion that Mason talks about, seeing these little kids or even adults solve a problem or just do something never done before, it is great. And then I also want to say, I said this one other time, but the people that are volunteering, you know, I remember the plumber brought this whole setup to teach kids how plumbing systems work. An electrician did the same thing. Like, these volunteers really put a lot of effort into it. Not just, you know, we have the Trades Up volunteers that do a heck of a job, you know, promoting this event, setting this event up, but the people that Mason gets and the whole team get really they care about this just as much as anyone could. So at this point, Steve, I'm going to turn it over to you. This is your 60 seconds to share something positive with our world.
And now, Steve Wheeler.
So I had asked about the business quotes, and there's a few that I've been chewing on recently, and I figured I would share. I think they're important as our model and remodeler's advantage is continual improvement. And really, you know, along the lines of be totally honest and fear no one, the couple that I've been just saying over and over recently is nothing changes if nothing changes. It's a great one. It's classic. If you find yourself in a spin cycle in your life, in your job, in any moment, just remember that the tiny changes, you could reference books like Atomic Habits, but tiny incremental changes can shift that big ship in a different direction. So the other one is if you don't hear it, eventually you're going to feel it. So if you're along those lines, if you're hearing something that people are telling you, in our cases, a lot of times it's somebody that's getting advice at a roundtables meeting, it's really preventative of something that could be coming down the road. So when friends, mentors, people are giving direction, make sure that you are actively listening, because those things can show themselves in different ways, potentially negative. So that's it, Greg. Those are two things. Recently, I've been telling people those quotes. They're potentially on the more improvement negative, but directed into a positive side. And that is it.
I want to say thank you to Mason Lord one more time. Steve Wheeler, thank you for being my partner here. And we will, I guess, see you next time.
That's it for this episode of the Why We Build Podcast. We hope you found something valuable to take back to your team. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. Please send in your ideas for future episodes. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one. If you want more information about our roundtables program, production manager groups, design manager groups, consulting services, or any of the Remodelers Advantage offerings, please visit remodelersadvantage.com or email Greg at remodelersadvantage.com.